Autumn would love to introduce you to Scale IP, the world's fastest growing IP commercialization software. Are you ready to transform your tech transfer office into a marketing powerhouse? Using proprietary IP transaction data, Scale IP helps you easily find high intent companies that partner or license with universities, gain technical fit insights, and launch personalized email campaigns with the right IP decision makers to save time, money, and effort. Don't let your innovations get lost in the shuffle. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free offer when you sign up with promo code AutumnLove1 at www.scaleip.com. That's Autumn, love, the number one, at www.scaleip.com.
You're listening to Autumn on the Air, the weekly podcast that brings you conversations about the impact of research commercialization and the people who make it happen. Join us for interviews with patent and licensing professionals, innovators, entrepreneurs, and tech transfer leaders on the issues and trends that matter most. Keep listening for an inside track on the people, IP policies, and politics changing our world.
Welcome to Autumn on the Air. Today, we're tackling a topic that's rapidly reshaping the landscape of tech transfer, artificial intelligence. Specifically, we'll be discussing the ethical frameworks that help us navigate the legal, trust, and societal challenges of using AI responsibly. To help us unpack these issues, we're joined by Charles Holleran, an expert in technology licensing and intellectual property management. Charles developed his passion for technology during his time at the California Institute of Technology, later refining his legal expertise at Georgetown University. With a career spanning major patent and trademark disputes in the federal courts across the U.S., Charles brings unparalleled insight into structuring technology licensing transactions. Charles has also become a trusted advisor on open source licensing, working closely with companies navigating the complexities of leveraging open source while growing their enterprises. Welcome, Charles. So excited to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Well, we have a lot of really interesting topics to cover today, so I want to go ahead and jump right in. And AI has been described as both a revolutionary tool and a potential disruptor across industries. When you look at the tech transfer landscape specifically, what unique ethical considerations do you see emerging, and how might they differ from challenges in other sectors?
So that's a great question. The tech transfer is the bridge that brings university innovation from the benchtop to the public. And universities are driven to develop that technology, share it with others. For AI to reach its full potential, what's really important is that the data that's used to train it is well curated and ethically sourced and used. So in the first instance, that's what we want to look at. How is the data acquired? How are we sharing the data? And are we doing that in a way that's ethical? Universities are in a position in that they control a vast amount of data across many different fields. And using that data responsibly, sharing it, raises these ethical questions. When we get to licensing that data, both in and out, those considerations become paramount. When we begin to use AI in the processes, that adds complicating factors in How are people then using the AI tools that were built in an ethical way? And how can we make sure that that is really leading to results that are both ethical and effective? And, you know, that effectiveness aspect of it really can't be ignored. In many circumstances, failing to use AI ethically will also lead to it being ineffective or problematic in its outcomes. So I think that's just vitally important for folks to consider.
Yeah, it's very complex, right? And we're going to touch on some of that complexity here. And maybe the best place to start is with some of the legal complexity. In tech transfer, as you know, confidentiality and privilege are paramount. With AI systems handling increasingly sensitive data, what specific legal ethics challenges do TTOs face in maintaining these standards, especially when it comes to protecting proprietary information?
So, interestingly, many of the same issues that tech transfer offices have been dealing with for a long time with the handling of this kind of sensitive information. The AI issues aren't necessarily unique, but the use of AI presents a new twist on understanding how these existing obligations can continue to be met when you start using AI systems. One of the big challenges is that a lot of times people don't understand where their data is going. Publicly available AI system, many of those systems are openly telling you that they are using your data to further train their models. That public sharing of data with a non-confidential source is a problem that needs to be avoided. One of the best ways around that is to host your own AI infrastructure. Many universities are in a position to do that. If there's not, there are commercial options with subscription models that promise to control your data. At that stage, it's just very important that you understand what the terms and conditions are and how that data is being shared. So, you know, these are not new challenges. When we get into what lawyers' responsibilities are, these are also the same responsibilities that lawyers have had for a long time with maintaining confidentiality and using new tools has always faced us with these kinds of challenges. You know, when fax machines were first coming out, there was a concern that the attorney-client privilege would be breached when somebody in the mailroom was accessing that fax from a centralized machine and then distributing it. We've come to understand what is reasonable and what protections need to be in place. We had this same conversation about email. When can you use email? How can you transact it? When do you need to use encryption? How are all these tools being used? With AI, I mean, the big challenge is that making sure people understand what's working, what data is going into the system, how is it being used, where does it go afterwards, who else has access to it, when are you sharing it out to third parties? And there can be a misunderstanding about how anonymized or safe your data is from recapture within a public system when you've used it. You know, there are examples where researchers were able to recreate word for word proprietary information that companies or you know individuals at companies had put up into a system, not understanding that that information could be captured and potentially extracted by another user.
So, Charles, have you seen university TTOs put processes in place to make sure that there are safeguards or SOPs in place to make sure that, you know, there are checks and balances, so to speak, with respect to making sure that confidential proprietary information doesn't end up on a ChatGPT or Perplexity or something like that?
You know, absolutely. Universities that put policies in place that restrict the use of LLMs that are either not the licensed commercial choice of the university or an internal self-hosted AI instance. The risk in the university system, though, is that that information needs to be continuously shared with the university population. Universities bring in new researchers every month, every year. And when those folks come in and, you know, perhaps a tech transfer office, when they talk to their researchers about the tools that they're using or best practices, it's an educational opportunity to let those researchers know that there's safe ways to use AI and less safe ways to use AI from a confidentiality standpoint.
Have you seen any specific protocols or best practices that you could recommend for TTOs in terms of, you know, maintaining transparency, building trust, and making sure that TTOs are maintaining proper disclosure and human oversight over AI-generated work?
Many institutions have already put into place policies for how they want LLMs and AI systems to be used. My alma mater, Caltech, has a very succinct LLM and AI use policy, and it focuses on disclosure so that you know when you're using a system, data and information protection, with guidelines about what to put into a public system and what not to. You know, don't put confidential information into unrestricted generative AI tools. The same way that you wouldn't necessarily post that kind of information to a public message board to get advice on a research technique, or, you know, in the computer programming space, there's lots of places where people go to look for, you know, answers to questions about, you know, programming. You know, you don't put your confidential information up into those spaces, even if those are useful spaces to collaborate or otherwise obtain useful information.
Now, I want to talk about AI-assisted inventorship, because that's a topic that is, you know, fascinating, number one, and two, a lot of people are talking about it, and also is very complex. And we've heard from the Federal Circuit about it, we've heard from the Patent Office about it, and we've heard from patent offices around the world about it. But I'm curious what you think in terms of when AI systems start to become more capable of generating original solutions. What ethical responsibilities do you think TTOs need to consider regarding inventorship disclosures to the USPTO?
So right now, the rules of inventorship haven't changed. And as you mentioned, the USPTO has put out guidelines for where is the borderline between using an AI as a contributor and when you rise to the level of what you still need to do to rise to the level of invention. There's not currently a disclosure requirement. However, tech transfer offices should be asking the question about how AI was used, if at all, in the development of a disclosed invention, because we can expect the patent to increase its diligence in asking for information or challenging the inventorship determination. If there is a prima facie case or evidence in the record that an inventor may not qualify as an inventor, and whether that's because AI was too involved or for any other reason, the examiner can issue a rejection or can issue a requirement that you provide additional information about it. So at that stage, if the TTOs have made the inquiry at the invention disclosure stage regarding how the invention was made and what the human contribution was, and making sure that it's at the level of significance required, if that office action comes in, then the TTO office is going to have the answer to the question ready to address the concerns of the examiner. And then that's where I see initially in the short term, the reason for tech transfer offices to start asking this question about AI inventorship and, you know, how AI was involved. Beyond that, there's no initial obligation, and, you know, an obvious pitfall is you don't name the AI as an inventor unless you're looking for trying to set a new legal precedent.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless you really want to get that message from the examiner and then have to deal with that. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. We know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when we're going to see that office action come for somebody somewhere. So it's going to be really interesting to watch that aspect develop. So I want to talk a little bit about using AI responsibly, because there are a lot of different frameworks out there for ethical AI use, which I know you're well aware of. Can you walk us through some of the most effective principles or frameworks, perhaps, for responsible AI adoption within TTOs? And how would you recommend TTOs balance innovation with ethical safeguards?
Sure. I really like a 13 principle framework that was put out by the Harvard Business Review. It's under their 13 principles for using AI responsibly from 2023. And hopefully we can share in the notes a link to that so that people can read that. I also really like the White House AI Bill of Rights. So the White House AI Bill of Rights sets out a shorter kind of 5 principle list of things to think about with the development and use of AI. Under that list, that folks should be protected from unsafe and ineffective systems. And so effectiveness and safety are two primary concerns. That people shouldn't be facing discrimination from algorithms, particularly those that they're not aware of being used or don't know how they're being used. People should be protected from abusive data practices. People should know when an automated system is being used. And then people should have the ability to opt out where appropriate and have access to a person who can help you work through any issues that might have come up with the use of that system. That is a very tight and useful framework. And I'd already mentioned that, Caltech has a very quick and I think accessible framework for thinking about the use of AI systems. Virtually, there are hundreds of these out there. My recommendation on what an organization that where their university hasn't promulgated one of these yet is to look around and find one that works well with your institutional culture. Some institutions work very well with long frameworks with very specific points. The NIST has put out a set of guidelines that really work into that kind of a framework, very specific, very detailed. Other folks work really well with a more broad type of framework that is really guiding principles so that the individuals and the researchers who are involved can take those principles and tailor them to what they're doing. But my recommendation is pick a system, pick a framework, and start working with it because it will guide you through in a systematic way all the various considerations that are important to be making so that you can make sure that your use of AI is effective and as ethical as possible.
So, Charles, like you said, there's a number of these different frameworks out there from very specific to very general. And I can see some TTOs saying, well, how do we keep our researchers up to date on these frameworks? Because like you said before, people are coming in and out all the time. And I could see where keeping people educated and up to date is a challenge. So what have you seen other TTOs do in this regard?
So I see primarily two things. One is making these frameworks available on a website, often within the same kind of training and introductory materials that folks are exposed to when they're onboarded, so they can continually refer back to it. When there's a university-wide policy, that's usually tied in together. And having the policy available and linked where you would look for other kinds of related policies, like, hey, what's our privacy policy? What's our open source software policy? Places where people might be going for looking for those kind of policy procedures. And then the next is to build it into your education process and your outreach to researchers. And so when you start asking them about how they're using AI or what their inventions are, when they're coming to talk about disclosures or you're going to a department and making an introduction, let them know that, both, what tools you might be rolling out and making use of within your tech transfer office that people might be accessing, sharing with them, kind of how those work, and then providing an educational opportunity to talk about what they should be thinking about when they're using AI in their research, and then pointing them back to those frameworks.
Now, you mentioned open source, and that's something you have a very strong background in open source licensing. And as you are well aware, I'm sure they have their own set of ethical and legal considerations. So I wanted to ask you, in what ways can the principles from open source inform responsible AI practices, especially for TTOs?
So, TTOs have had to deal with open source licensing for a long time now. The open source software movement, I think, intersects very well with the university's goal of getting information out and, making it useful to people. Publication is a primary concern for most researchers and a primary goal of many researchers. Get that information out there so people can use it together. With AI, in particular, the AI training data, is most powerful when we've seen when there is a large volume of that training data. And so one question is, how can we make training data broadly accessible so that people can use it to train their systems with a wide amount of high quality data? And there is going to be a requirement that we engage with many of the same questions we did with open source software. So what can you share? What limits are you going to put on when people have shared that with you or you with them on using it either commercially or non-commercially, whether they need to share alike in order to have the ability to share your data so that there's always an exchange. Many of those same issues with open source can guide us in how we want to engage with it with AI. You know, universities have come up with their own philosophies on how to use open source software, what kind of licenses that they like, and what they're going to permit their researchers to do or to not do in that field. With AI, we need to be making those same decisions, and we need to make some of those same cultural trade-offs in making it available, adequately protecting it, ensuring that there's attribution, putting limits where it may be that we're very friendly to people using it for research, but less friendly for it being used for commercial purposes without a different license level. And as universities engage with these AI questions, I think you can look to analogs in other areas, open source being one of them, for how do you approach that from a broader philosophical perspective? And then how do you take that perspective and implement it in, you know, either legal frameworks or, you know, institutional rules and norms on how you want to go about making those decisions in the AI world?
So, Charles, a lot of people resonate with real world examples. Could you share a case where reasonable AI practices made a measurable difference? And that might be a situation, for example, where a company successfully built trust, maybe mitigated risks, or promoted innovation engagement through their AI policies?
Yeah, absolutely. What I really have is an example where the lack of attention to ethical AI policies led to a speed bump in commercializing a product. So this will again draw an analogy to the open source world. Software companies that make use of open source software in their development have faced increasing due diligence requirements to disclose what open source software they're using, how they're complying with those licenses, and how it might implicate commercialization down the road. We've seen the same due diligence questions now raised in connection with what data was used in training your AI model. What license rights did you have to it? How is there a clean or a base model for your AI model that's untrained that can be transferred and trained on data where there is no question as to the rights to use it? And so in the research framework, and early on, we've seen that lots of people pull from the internet and scrape available data to prove that their AI model will come up with interesting and useful results. At the research level, the level of diligence needed for the data that's used may be different than the level that is needed for commercialization. All of the ethical frameworks and considerations for AI use that I've looked at and worked with and talked to folks about ask the question at the data level and the training stage in addition to the development and use stages. And so we've already seen that being casual about the data that you're using at the development stage leads to roadblocks or problems at the commercialization stage. And that can make the difference between a deal going through easily or not. It can make the difference between it being an extremely high value product to being one where there are a lot more questions and people realize that they're going to have to make different significant investments to bring it back to a stage where it's usable.
That's really going to be interesting from a due diligence perspective, like you've been alluding to. And that's where I think record keeping is going to be real key. And I would think it's going to be challenging in certain instances, perhaps to trace where the data came from if you haven't developed your kind of own AI in-house system.
Exactly. And in many cases, researchers are using repositories that have known issues with them. And in the last year and a half, I've seen large data repositories that are easily scrapable from the internet publicly change their terms of use to exclude the ability to use them for AI training, whereas previously many terms of use were silent. And so it's just an ever-changing landscape, and taking care and being sure that you have the rights that are clear at the get-go saves you from having to go back and figure out what was done or what was used later on.
Yeah, I think it really, you're making the case where it's best for TTOs and universities to build their own AI structures, because then you know where the data came from, the ownership rights are clear, you know, than maybe using some of these commercially available large language model tools.
Yeah, absolutely. And so universities having policies about data, universities figuring out how they can make their own aggregate data available to their researchers so that there's a repository that they can use with confidence. And then there are a growing number of TTOs that are cooperating with one another, sometimes with commercial intermediaries, to create shared data resources so that, you know, for example, different hospital systems have data. And many of the concerns about AI right now are talking about LLMs, large language models. There's a lot of other great work being done with AI that are more expert systems with AI. And those are dependent on a very different kind of data that where there are a lot of ethical concerns and a lot of privacy concerns, and medical data being the one that, you know, I'll talk about for a moment. When different universities are sharing their medical data, sometimes, you know, also sharing data from private hospital systems, other research institutes, collecting that into a place where everybody involved has cross-licensed one another to use that data under understood terms, so that you know both what's going to happen to your trained model that was trained on that data, what are you going to be able to use that trained model for? And then what are you going to be able to do with the outputs of that model that is trained on a set of data that came from multiple sources? And so rather than going into it and just using any data that's interesting that you can get your hands on and that you can look at, we're not yet to the point where everybody accepts that the same way that I can go into a library and read anything that I'm allowed to put my eyes on and then use it for my own creative purposes. We're not quite yet there to say that any AI model that can look at that data can then use it for any purpose. And until we're there, and it's very unsettled in the law about where those lines are, the safest route is to go with fully licensed data.
Absolutely. And it's going to be fascinating to see where those legal lines are drawn. And there's going to be some really fascinating case law that comes out of it. And you mentioned bias just briefly, and I want to go back to that for a second, because that is a big concern in AI. And with TTOs increasingly using AI, there's a real risk that these systems replicate social biases. I mean, we're all humans. We're programming the AI. We have unconscious bias, so it's not surprising that these systems are going to have societal biases as well. So what are some of the proactive measures you think TTOs can implement to help detect and reduce bias in their AI models?
It's a really good question. Companies are trying to develop tools that can measure the bias in the system so that you can get a sense of it. I haven't seen a tool that I can recommend or that I'm confident is the right tool to use. The first place to start is to recognize that bias is an issue. And many of the frameworks talk about bias being a potential issue and being an issue that we need to control for. So if you know there's bias in the training data, then once you've done your training, you might do some testing to see if there's bias in the system. So going back to the medical example, historically, women have been excluded from medical research for various reasons. The data that comes out of that, therefore, has a blind spot for things that are specific to women. If you know that you've trained your system on a small demographic that is missing important groups, you may really want to do some testing on the output of that system, in particular, to see if it is effective and fair in evaluating things for those excluded groups. If you have training data in a medical system, only for men to detect for a certain condition, you may question whether it's going to be effective in detecting that in women. One of the benefits of the AI systems, that's different than a human system is that we have the ability to then feed the trained AI a vast amount of data and see how it treats it. And we can look at those outputs and ask questions. I was reading an article earlier today that somebody tested a system for evaluating resumes, and they found that it was giving biased results. And they were able to look at the results and then feed it hundreds or thousands or millions of resumes against various job descriptions, and then run statistical analysis against it and say, is it favoring men? Is it favoring, white versus black applicants? And so we've been struggling with this with human-mediated systems, and we are developing better tools and awarenesses to question, does the output of my process unfairly bias somebody? Those same questions and analysis processes can be done against the AI systems. Hopefully, it can be done more quickly, and then we can find ways to remediate the system. But we cannot go into this with the assumption that it's a computer system, therefore it's unbiased. We need to go into it with the assumption that the data is likely has biases, and we need to be aware that the outcomes, therefore, may have those same biases.
And I know something that's important to you as well as me is obviously inclusive innovation. And how could bias in AI impact underrepresented groups? We hear all the time about the lack of women inventors, lack of minority inventors. So what do you think tech transfer offices could do to ensure that when they do use AI, that it broadens rather than restricts participation from these particular groups?
So one proposal I've seen is, potentially using an AI tool to sort through the vast number of invention disclosures to help make decisions about, what to protect, and perhaps flip the script on that and use AI tools to identify innovations that have not been picked up by the existing processes. So use them to say yes, rather than using them to say no, is one thing that we can do with those tools. Another potentially interesting way to use AI tools to alleviate bias is that different people may have different comfort levels in interacting with the current systems. Some people may be more comfortable interacting with an AI than they are with interacting with a bureaucracy that maybe they previously not have good experiences with. And so if we can develop tools that are inclusive in how they're used and are designed to allow people to use them in an open way, I think that's another potential use for AI that can help substitute for some other challenges that may exist for accessibility and other things. But primarily, the biggest thing to do is let's involve the people that have not been as well represented in the process of developing the AI, choosing the tools that we're using, talking about the user interface of those tools to make them more accessible to groups that have been previously excluded, and keep the humans in the loop and keep the involvement of all of the groups into those things. And there's been some recent research that's really interesting as to, you know, what level of inclusion do you need to have to make sure that a group has a real voice in the process? And so I think making sure that it's significant involvement with multiple voices across groups will make sure that their involvement is effective in making the change and getting their voice heard.
Yeah, it's just like having an inclusive TTO office. The more viewpoints and vantage points you have, the better, you know, your culture is going to be. So here, the better your AI tool is going to be at eliminating some of the biases versus if you just have one particular viewpoint.
Right.
So I wanted to move on and ask you, Charles, from your perspectives, do you think TTOs should take a leading role in setting ethical standards for AI use, particularly when it comes to managing this bias that we've been talking about, as well as societal impact?
So I think that within the sphere of tech transfer, they should definitely be leading. The tech transfer office has a unique view in some universities in that they touch all kinds of different departments. They have lots of different stakeholders. They are seeing a viewpoint of incoming technology, outgoing technology, the adoption of technology. I think they are in a particularly good position to talk about and make sure that AI is being used ethically. Whether they are in a position to be the overall leader within the university is a question of for each university's culture. But because there are so many aspects of AI that, you know, potentially some tech transfer officers may be the only ones that have that overall view, I think it's important that if they're not leading the discussion, that they're involved in it, and that within the adoption of AI tools within a tech transfer office, I think it's important that they insist on the ethical use of AI, both, you know, to make sure that their outcomes are as good as they can be, and to make sure that they're providing the best services they can to their constituents within the university.
So do you think there are any specific actions or policies that they should advocate for, whether within their own university or maybe across a particular industry?
I think I would start with advocating for there to be a framework that, you know, both that they're using and that the university is using, and to advocate for an ongoing conversation. And, you know, finally, to advocate for as much transparency as possible across divisions, and to break down the silos and make sure that people are getting educated on what's going on.
So looking ahead, Charles, do you think ethical considerations around AI will evolve significantly in the next few years? Where do you think this is all going to go?
I do think it's going to evolve. I think it is potentially going to evolve very quickly, depending on how these tools develop and roll out. What we haven't seen a lot of yet are questions about the consequences of using these tools, because adoption is just starting. Once that happens, we're going to have the usual cycle of discovery and realization of what the problems are. And when those are revealed, we're going to jump back to, all right, how do we solve these? How do we think about these? Data sharing, data aggregation, data misuse are the questions that, or the issues that are, I think, are going to lead to many of these problems. I think we're going to be facing an increasing, changing landscape of disclosure obligations regarding disclosing where the data came from, how the data is being used, and how the results of AI interventions are being used to affect real-world outcomes. And there, I think, if tech transfer offices are thinking about these issues as they begin to adopt the use of AI, and as they observe, you know, research being done and AI being used throughout the university, that they'll be able to keep ahead of it. Yeah. We face these same issues with privacy laws, and companies that were not inappropriately sharing data have not had any challenges with new data privacy laws. Starting from a respectful and ethical place generally keeps some companies from running into problems when people look about it at abuses and say, hey, we need to stop this. If you can say, hey, we've been thinking about this and we're doing the right thing already, then these changes are going to be less of an issue.
It'll be curious for me to see if the government will start requiring, as part of its compliance requirements under Bayh-Dole, if you know, a researcher gets government funding, if part of the requirements will start to be, you know, was AI used to generate data from the government funds? And if so, what, you know, large language model system was used, again, to your points about, you know, ethical considerations and data use rights and things like that.
No, it's going to be very interesting. We haven't created a legal framework yet for answering the question of, you know, once you've used the data to train a model, and then you've put different data into the model to obtain information and outcome, how those rights split up among the different users of it. You know, in copyright, we have the sense that the creator initially holds a copyright. For inventions, the rights start with the inventor, and then they become assigned. In the trademark world, the company that uses it, it's the user, not the creator, that gains those rights. We don't have those norms yet for AI. And as those develop, we're going to have to modify our contractual behaviors and our day-to-day behaviors in order to work within those. And I think the law is going to lag behind what people are actually doing and the norm that develop among users. And to that end, I think that helping these things, that we start out working from a place of mutual respect so that we get to a good place when the law really happens.
Yeah, I agree. Usually the law does lag behind. So it's not going to be unexpected that it does the same thing here. And so it's going to be a typical catch-up type of thing, I think, for sure, with AI. So Charles, as the podcast comes to a close, I wanted to ask you, for TTOs that are just beginning to adopt AI, where would you recommend they start in building an ethical foundation for their AI use?
So I would recommend that you pick a framework. Either adopt a framework that's already out there or adapt one that works within your institution. Once you've done that, the most important thing is to keep a human in the loop on all of these steps. Address bias at the data training stage and take care to use well-curated data, both for the initial training and for fine-tuning the AI, to ensure that it's effective and that it's fair to everyone that's using it at each stage.
Are there any essential steps or anything else you can recommend for tech transfers to integrate ethical considerations effectively in order to establish trust within their communities?
I think transparency is the final piece that is most important for creating that trust. The TTO offices that I've worked with do a great job of building the personal interactions with the researchers within the organization and, you know, really creating those bridges. Keeping a human in the loop and being, you know, transparent about what they're doing, continue to educate folks, is the way to build and maintain that trust.
Well, Charles, thank you. This has been a fascinating discussion, and we're definitely going to have you come back as these laws and things change. Really appreciate your time and all your expertise today.
Thanks very much. I enjoyed the opportunity.
Charles, thank you so much for this insightful discussion. You've given us a lot to think about, from the nuances of legal ethics and AI to real strategies for reducing bias and promoting responsible innovation. This is such an important conversation for TTOs, especially as AI continues to reshape the landscape of tech transfer. To our listeners, We hope today's episode has sparked some new ideas and provided actionable steps for approaching AI ethically and responsibly in your own organization. Thanks for joining us on Autumn on the Air. And as always, stay tuned for more conversations that help drive the future of tech transfer. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Autumn on the Air with Lisa Mueller. Get social with us and share your thoughts. You can tweet us at AUTM or visit us online at AUTM.net. We'll be back next week on the air. Be sure to join us.